Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IBM ESVs, at the heart of Smart SOA and System Z with new capabilities. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. The teleconference will explore the recent enhancements in WebSphere Message Broker for ZOS, WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus for ZOS, and DataPower XI50. The speakers for today's teleconference are Anthony O'Dowd, IBM Senior Technical Staff Member, WebSphere Message Broker Architect and Strategy, and Rob Phippen, Ph.D., WebSphere ESB Architect. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our first speaker, Anthony O'Dowd.
Good afternoon. I'd like to speak with my colleague, Rob Phippen, on IBM's ESBs at the heart of a smart SOA on System Z and new capabilities relating to that. So if we move on to chart number two, this outlines the agenda for this afternoon's session. There'll be four parts of the session. The first part will be relatively brief, and we'll give an ESB overview, including a mapping out of IBM's ESB offerings. And then we'll spend some time on each of those offerings in terms of the new capabilities available in WebSphere Message Broker 6.1, WebSphere ESB 6.1, and WebSphere DataPower, the XI50 device 3.6.1 release. Moving on to chart number three, it's just a banner chart. I'd now like to spend a little bit of time just quickly going through IBM's ESB portfolio and giving an overview of what an ESB is. Chart number four, what is an enterprise service bus? Well, an ESB is all about enabling integration between loosely coupled applications. And it's really relevant in many different kinds of architectures. Many folks know it as relevant in service-oriented architectures. It's relevant in message-driven architectures. And increasingly, with the emergence of event-driven architectures, an ESB is actually a critical component. And no matter how you're using an ESB in either one of these three architectures, there are certain capabilities around the mediation that happens between a service requester and a service provider, or between applications that are connected across an ESB, that are common to all of them. And those capabilities are matching, conversion, transformations, and message distribution. And essentially, it's this combination of mediations on top of an ESB across these different kinds of architectures that really does enable application connectivity. We can combine applications and connect applications across many different platforms. We can combine them using different programming models. One might be synchronous, another might be asynchronous, and then across different kinds of messaging standards. So an enterprise service bus is an absolutely vital part of your connectivity infrastructure, which allows you to connect different applications and services in quite a few different architectural styles. If we move to chart number five, we can see the four capabilities of an ESB really expanded in a little bit more detail. I'd just like to spend a little bit of time now going through what those four capabilities are. So the first capability of an ESB is to be able to match and route communications between applications and services. So if we look at the diagram insert on the right of chart number five, we can see there's an enterprise service bus, and around that there are different applications and services that are connected to it. And the application coupling between applications which are connected via an enterprise service bus is quite different to a point-to-point coupling. In this application style, applications are connected through the bus, and the first capability required by the bus is the ability to take an application or service request from an originating application and make sure that it's matched and routed to the appropriate consumer that's also connected to the bus. And that's the first straightforward and actually most basic and important capability of a bus. It's to get the request to where it needs to get to. Of course, an application requester and an application consumer can often be running on different transport protocols. For example, we might have an existing MQ application or JMS application that needs to be enabled via the Web Services SOAP standard. And therefore, another key asset that an ESB brings to the connectivity story is the ability to connect and convert applications which have different transport protocols. So, for example, the application that's down in the front of the ESB, which I think you can see a graphic for a PDA there, that might be enabled over something like a telemetry device, maybe using the MQE protocol, or maybe it might be enabled using HTTP over REST. The ESB can take that transport request and it convert it into an existing request for an application that might require consumption using the MQ protocol, or be based on a file input or a JMS kind of input. So the second key capability of an ESB is to convert between different transport protocols. The third capability is to be able to transform between different data formats. And the transformation can be both a logical transformation, in which maybe extra fields need to be added to a request or removed or reordered or aggregated. And another capability in terms of data format transformation is a naive transformation, maybe from one XML format into another, or from an XML format into a binary or text format, which may be typical in industry standard messaging. The fourth capability of an ESB is all about distributing events between different parties. And often this can be quite an anonymous style of connectivity, and a good example is publish-subscribe, where one application party publishes onto the bus information related to a certain topic, and then other parties can be connected in to the ESB and receive that information. That information, as it's sent to them, may well be converted into a different protocol transport and may well be transformed. But I think it's important to capture this idea of being able to identify and distribute business events across an ESB. If we move on to chart number 6, we can see that IBM actually has a portfolio of ESB offerings. And those offerings are WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, WebSphere Message Broker, and WebSphere Data Power Integration Appliance XI50. And these ESBs all provide ESB capabilities similar to those that we saw on chart number 5, but they're actually specialized into different domains. So if you look at WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, that's actually optimized to be integrated with the WebSphere Application Server platform for an integrated SOA experience upon that platform. If you look at WebSphere Message Broker, that is built for universal connectivity and transformation within heterogeneous environments. And if we look at the WebSphere Data Power Integration Appliance, that's a purpose-built piece of hardware for simplified deployment and hardened security. So the main idea here is that to have an effective connectivity architecture, you will require more than one ESB offering, whether that's specialized on the WebSphere Application Server platform, whether that's built for universal connectivity and heterogeneous platforms, or whether it's a purpose-built piece of hardware. IBM has all three elements to providing a portfolio of offerings that addresses the whole ESB needs. And in fact, many analysts now are actually saying that even into 2009, 2010, most enterprises will actually require multiple ESBs around these different specialization points if you want to effectively grow. Moving on to chart number 7, all of the ESBs, as I say, even though they are specialized around different sweet spots, have key capabilities. The key capabilities are mediation. Okay, they can take a request and they can do something to it. They can all transform. They all have multiple protocol connectivities. So whether you're looking to connect over web services, MQ, JMS, or whatever, they can all provide that basic capability. Web service standards are something that all the ESBs major upon. It's good to know that when you have the different ESBs, they interoperate very well with each other, and also they provide a range of mission-critical qualities of service. So whereas chart number 6 looks at our portfolio of offerings and talks about their specializations and where they can be more appropriate depending on your deployment pattern, chart number 7 re-emphasizes the fact that all of the ESB capabilities are available inside all of the three offerings. Okay, so I think that nicely summarizes what an ESB is all about and talks at a high level about IBM's suite of offerings inside the ESB space. Moving on to chart number 8 now, the banner chart, and I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about WebSphere Message Broker, focusing on some of the content that we've seen in the version 6.1 release. Chart number 9 talks about WebSphere Message Broker on System Z. WebSphere Message Broker is an ESB implementation, and again it talks about simplifying application connectivity. It routes and transforms requests from anywhere to anywhere, and to that end it supports a wide range of protocols and transports, so anything from the MQ transport to any JMS, native HTTP, web services, and even file-based requests and requests out of systems like SAP and Siebel and PeopleSoft, as well as raw TCP/IP applications. It supports a range of data formats, including obviously binary and COBOL formats, XML, and industry formats such as Swift, EDI, and HIPAA. And it allows you to do a broad range of operations inside a mediation. So you can route messages, filter them, transform them, and even higher level capabilities such as being able to correlate and detect patterns between them. It's a relatively simple product to program. It has constructs called message flows, nodes, and the data structure called the message tree, which describes messages in a format-independent manner. And it has a strong operational experience. So it has extensive admin and systems management capabilities that are applicable on Z Linux and ZOS, And Z Linux and Z OS are natively supported. These are native implementations. And it does offer excellent processing performance. Moving on to chart number 10, just a quick chart to show the roadmap for Message Broker. A Message Broker has been in the marketplace for a little time. It's a mature product. We brought out our version 6 release over 2 years ago now. And recently, November 2007, we brought out our version 6.1. And that's the release I'm going to spend some time speaking about this afternoon. We have a healthy roadmap for Message Broker. We'll be bringing out some more offerings throughout 2008. And our next major release will come out in something like a 2-year time frame, which is the standard inter-release gap for IBM products, which are relatively mature in the marketplace. Moving on to chart number 11. Version 6.1 had 5 key themes. Those were ease of use and productivity, enhanced SOA support, admin and security, platform and performance coverage, and extended connectivity. And it's important that whenever we develop a release of Message Broker, we have these 5 key themes. They allow us to think about the release coherently. Ease of use and productivity was all focused around getting a solution created, deployed, and into a value situation within an enterprise. Enhanced SOA support was all about boosting our web services standards and also integrating with Registry and Repository. Admin and security kind of speak for themselves, all about the operational experience, how you can manage the broker, and also introducing a runtime security model. Extended connectivity was all about accepting into the broker requests from a variety of different technologies, whether that's the new web services support or file, or requests from enterprise information systems such as SAP and PeopleSoft. And then performance and platform coverage was, for example, the ability to run the broker on Z Linux, as well as it runs on Z OS, and also improving the performance of the product. If I move on to chart number 12 now, there's a single chart which actually talks about the release in terms of all of the content within those 5 themes. So, for example, if we look at ease of use and productivity, you'll see there are a couple of key items in there. One was around reducing the time to get started with Message Broker, and another to do with, you know, reducing all the development tasks it takes to actually deploy a working asset. And for each one of those themes, we can see on chart 12 the detail that we can go into and talk about specific line items. All I'm going to do in this chart is bring to the listener's attention how much there is in version 6.1. Just because it's a point release, you shouldn't think that there isn't a major amount of function in there. Okay, and there are reasons why we've called it 6.1 that are kind of reasons to do with the IBM release process rather than thinking that this isn't a really significant release. And surely on chart number 12, you can see that it's a significant amount of new function. What I'm going to do now, in the time that I have available, is go through and pick out some of the key capabilities in version 6.1 around our Z Linux and our Z OS offerings, which I know are important to our System Z customers. If I move on to chart number 13, we can talk about platform support for System Z. We have simplified our offering in version 6.1 so that we only have a Message Broker offering. In version 6 of Message Broker, we had a Message Broker offering and an Event Broker offering that used to specialize around pub-sub scenarios. We found a moving forward and synergy with the MQ product that actually it's more sensible if we just have a single Message Broker offering that focuses on our ESB functionality and doesn't just focus on pub-sub capabilities, which is what Event Broker did. In terms of operating systems and hardware platforms, we do work natively Linux on Z-Series and also on ZOS. And I know that Linux on Z-Series does present a significant opportunity for our customers to exploit some of the characteristics of System Z, as well as using the Linux platform. Very often this can be highly relevant when we look at server consolidation for distributed platforms that may have low utilization MIPS boxes, which have proliferated and need to be consolidated onto a single platform. So introducing very strong support for Linux on Z-Series has been a key item for us. To that end, we've introduced full 64-bit support on Z-Linux, and the default execution group size and all commands are 64-bit. And in fact, on Z-Linux, it is a native 64-bit offering exploiting 64-bit hardware as well. So it does have a prereq of ZOS 1.7 and above. For now, on ZOS, we do remain 31-bit, but it is in our roadmap to move ZOS to also have full 64-bit support in the version 7 timeframe. In terms of database support, we support DB2 on ZOS, and on DB2 for Z Linux, we also support databases including DB2 and Oracle. In terms of our Java support, we have full JDBC XA support for Z Linux, and this will follow in version 7 for our ZOS product. And we do require Java 5 on all platforms. Moving on to chart number 14, we've significantly simplified the product, and this has been an ongoing activity that we've had in Message Broker over the years. I speak on chart number 14 about the main things that we've done. We've reduced the toolkit size, removed things like Rational Agent Controller to make debug much more natural for our users. Install is the ISMP installer for Z-Linux, which is very natural for our Z-Linux users, and of course full SMPE for our ZOS users. There is default configuration, which allows you to get going very, very simply, and we do have a full sample gallery for all the new function we've developed. In terms of a product prerequisite, the only prerequisite now that the broker requires is MQ version 6 or above, and that's on Z-Linux and on ZOS, and a production database. We do supply CloudScape and DB2 for development and test, and on ZOS you will need to use DB2. This is the last release of Message Broker that will actually require a database. As we move forward into version 7 of the product on Z-Linux and ZOS, we will not require a database anymore. Moving on to chart number 15, it's relatively straightforward to move to version 6.1. We support migration from both version 5 and version 6, and you can migrate directly from version 5, skipping over version 6 if you haven't installed that yet. In terms of compatibility, all development assets, including message sets, message flows, eSQL, Java, maps, and all the rest of it, will all run without change, and they all are all designed to run without change. You can also deploy those straight away to 64-bit. So if you've been running your Z-Linux broker on 32-bit previously, you can now deploy those into 64-bit, and they all will work correctly. There's also rollback support, which allows you to roll back from a previous version, from a newly installed version, back to a previous version. In terms of coexistence, you can install version 6.1 right alongside version 5 and version 6, so that if you're an existing broker user, you can incrementally migrate to the new release. In terms of quality, we really feel that the broker is production ready as it went out the door in November 2007. Moving on to chart number 16. Again, we've made some significant enhancements around the tooling experience in version 6.1. The toolkit is its smallest ever installed. My feeling is that we're really making good progress in this space, and whilst we're not perfect, we've certainly made some significant enhancements in reducing the toolkit size. We made a significant toolkit revision in December 2006, and that was called version 6.02 of the toolkit, and we continue to build on those advances through Message Broker version 6.1. There are new wizards, a new whistle drag drop and experience, and there's also drag and drop mapping, which continues to be enhanced, including the ability to call Java from a map. There are many new ease of use features around the toolkit, including a message viewer, which allows you to configure a node without having to know what the structure of a message looks like in terms of its COBOL copybook layout. You can actually go in and see a visual representation of the message and configure the node appropriately. And there's also an integrated test facility, such that if you have developers who want to deploy to the Z-Linux platform or the ZOS platform, they can have a free unit test license that's running on their development platform, which may be a Windows box or a Linux desktop system, and they can actually debug and deploy their flows on that box, and then when they're ready, they can deploy it through QA and into production on the ZOS or Z-Linux box. And those facilities have all been added inside our toolkit in version 6.1. Moving on to chart number 17, we've introduced significant support for web services in version 6.1. The broker now can act as a full web services provider or a web services consumer. As a web services provider, we have two new nodes called the SOAP input node and the SOAP reply node, and they allow the broker to catch an inbound web service request. Oftentimes, the broker will catch this inbound request, send it to a back-end application, which may be an MQ or a JMS or a file-based application or any one of the transports the broker currently supports, get the response back from that application, compose the web service reply using the SOAP node, and then send that back to the initial web services consumer. The broker can also be a web service consumer itself, whereby it can use one of the new SOAP request nodes to make a request to an external web service as part of an existing broker message flow. This means that we can enable existing applications to consume web services without themselves being web services literate. We support both synchronous and asynchronous SOAP requests. Synchronous requests are supported with the SOAP request node, and then asynchronous requests are supported with the SOAP async request node and the SOAP async response node. And that follows a slightly different pattern inside the broker, which allows us not to have a thread hanging out for a long-standing web service request. The SOAP asynchronous request node will make a request on one thread, send that to an external web service, and when the response comes back, that can be handled as and when it returns on the SOAP async response node. And this allows us not to have to tie up threads whilst we may be waiting for long-running web service. Whilst we may not be waiting for long-running back-end web services. You can obviously combine the SOAP provider and SOAP consumer capabilities of the broker to be a web services intermediary. And there are also other nodes called the SOAP extract and SOAP envelope node that make it easier to deal with breaking apart the SOAP payload, that make it easier to simplify processing a SOAP message by stripping off the SOAP headers and just being able to deal with the SOAP payload. The most significant enhancements that we've made to web services processing in Broker version 6.1 is the ability to support WS security and WS addressing out of the box. WS addressing is important. It's effectively the way in which we address different services in the network, how we get requests to them, how we get responses to them, and how they send responses if there's an error situation. Also, WS addressing gives us the ability to carry state inside a message, and many folks who are used to using MQ will know what a powerful pattern that is. In terms of WS security support, the broker supports a full range of authentication, encryption, and signing mechanisms, including username and password and 509 certificates for authentication, and a comprehensive range of encryption and signing algorithms. And all of these are configured using policy sets. Web services security is an important standard because it allows us to interoperate between web services in a highly secure way. However, it is a fairly complex standard, and it is important as a very usable way to be able to configure the security capabilities in WS security. And the policy set editor and policies are all about making this experience easy to do. So no matter that you come to the broker and want to use the new SOAP nodes and WS security and may be slightly intimidated by how complex that is, know that there's configuration using policy and a full policy set editor that makes that experience relatively usable and declarative in style. You don't need to have to write a whole load of code to get WS security processing, either as a web service provider or a web service consumer in the broker. And all of these capabilities are actually built into the broker. There's no adjunct process that you need to do. It runs natively inside the message broker address spaces. Moving on to chart number 18, we're going to spend a little bit of time on data power later, but it is worth noting that we do have actually some built-in capabilities within the broker that allow us to bring together the benefits of Message Broker running on System Z with the benefits of a data power appliance in certain scenarios. And the scenario that we've actually focused on is around WS security. Now, we'll speak a little bit more about data power in a while, but it's fair to say that one great use for data power when it's being used with Message Broker is to actually get a really elegant WS security processing pattern where data power sits outside the System Z box, but very closely integrated with it, and actually performs that WS security processing effectively in a specialized way, in an optimized way, such that the request can be forwarded to the broker, and it can process it as though it has been decrypted, because indeed it has been by the data power appliance. And what this allows us to do is to not use sometimes very, very expensive MIPS that are running up normally on a ZOS platform to do relatively mundane WS security processing, but to exploit a specialized appliance to get the very most out of our WS security processing. And inside the broker version 6 and indeed broker version 6.1, we have the ability through the broker administration tooling to discover web services that are running inside the broker and, using those same policy sets that I talked about for the SOAP nodes, actually define which elements of WS security run inside that specialized data pattern. Our appliance. So chart 18 shows a little bit about how data power and message broker can work very strongly together, and that reinforces the things we said at the top of the presentation about IBM's ESB portfolio, Web3 ESB, Web3 message broker, and Web3 data power really working very tightly with each other. If we move on to chart number 19, Message Broker has also introduced support for WebSphere Service Registry and Repository. WSRR, WebSphere Service Registry and Repository, is actually a key element to any enterprise. Every business that we really talk about always knows what its position is in terms of the assets that it owns. And what WSRR gives you is a way to generate an inventory for all your existing application and service assets. So, for example, if you've got WSDLs that describe your web services, if you've got MQ service definitions, and many users may not be aware of this capability that's recently been made available, there is now an MQ service definition. You can actually catalog your MQ applications within WebSphere Service Registry and Repository. And that gives you a full full model and a full asset inventory of your web service applications and of your MQ applications. When they're held within WSRR, you can classify these assets. So you can say these applications and these services are related to human resources or payroll. You can develop relationships between applications so that you can see dependencies between them. And also you can associate user data with these applications. So you can say that I want to associate maybe a class equals gold parameter with a certain application or a class equals silver parameter with another application. And you can actually define user attributes, sometimes called metadata, with these applications and services. And the real power of a registry is that it serves as a technical governance point whereby you've described your applications and service assets, and you can associate relationships, classifications, and metadata with those. And that gives you a point of description and a point of control, because increasingly all of IBM's key runtime products in terms of middleware are able to plug into WSRR and in some sense be controlled and guided by the information within it. Message Broker version 6.1 has a couple of new nodes called the Registry Lookup Node and the Endpoint Lookup Node, which I'm talking about on chart number 19. And what those allow the message flow designer, the integration connectivity designer, to do is to actually refer to the contents of the registry inside an integration, inside some connectivity logic, such that they can be guided by the contents of that data. And what that means is that if you're using WSRR as a governance point inside your enterprise, a broker now can be aware and literate of that information and act accordingly. And that means that if you change the characteristics of an application, you can update your registry, and your broker technology or ESB technology can change based on that registry reconfiguration. You don't need to go through a new redeployment step, and the operational experience is relatively straightforward. And of course, WSRR is a key component of the Z platform. So just know that as you move to start using a registry and cataloging your web service and your MQ and other assets, know that the broker, as well as our other ESB technologies, has built-in capabilities to drive its processing through registry content. Moving on to chart number 20, we do have support for major packaged applications which are supported on ZOS. So, for example, on the ZOS platform, Message Broker now can interoperate fully with a SAP system, and on the Z Linux platform, we can also interoperate with SAP and PeopleSoft. These adapter nodes are delivered inside the broker to provide both inbound and outbound scenarios. So, for example, you can connect your CICS system into SAP, or your SAP system will generate data that you can drive into CICS. And that's actually a key integration point, because very often our package applications provide key data, but in some sense they lie in a silo. And what can be very important for our System Z users is to be able to get information out of these package applications into our System Z box, where we do actually hold often systems of record, and being able to populate that with information from SAP is actually vital. And the converse is also true, where we can actually take information from our System Z and use products like Message Broker as an ESB technology to be able to populate SAP, to be able to support packaged applications in making better decisions. So if you do have a need to be able to integrate with SAP or PeopleSoft on ZOS or Linux on System Z, know that there are capabilities now in Broker built into the product to allow you to do that. And this capability is fully integrated into the Message Broker address spaces. There are no adjunct processes or address spaces that are running to deliver this capability. It is fully built in. Moving on to chart number 21, another key capability that we've introduced is built-in file processing. And the broker running on Z Linux and on ZOS now has the ability to process files both locally and files residing on FTP servers, either on System Z or on outlying boxes. And this really allows us to do some really significant file processing on the ESB. If we look at the kind of scenarios we're looking at, we have the new file input and file output node. And the kind of scenarios are file to queue, file to database, or even taking a file, filtering it, finding the important records, moving those to one file, moving the less important records maybe to another file. The broker also supports very large files, and by that I mean up to gigabyte size. To do that, we've had to do some significant engineering within the broker to make all our parsers what's called stream-based, such that we can take in a bit of the file, read as much as we need to be able to detect the record delimiters, and only process the file records that we need to in such a way to minimize the amount of storage that's being used, so that even when you're processing a gigabyte file, that's not all held in core at the same time. Often a file is a gigabyte file, not because there's a single very large record in it, because it's built up rather of tens, hundreds, thousands, and sometimes even tens of thousands of records. So a key problem within the file nodes is how do you actually break a file into its natural records? And there are different delimiting regimes that we can apply within the broker. We supply simple delimiting regimes such as line feed, carry return, fixed length, fixed length 72, 80, and all the rest of it, or even user-defined character delimiters. But one of the beauties of Message Broker 6.1 is that you can actually take an existing message definition, that can be a COBOL copybook definition or an XML schema if that's what you're using, or a Swift message record definition, and use that to break the file apart into those appropriate records. So with the file processing nodes capability in Message Broker 6.1, we do have the ability to bring files onto the ESB and actually do some really intelligent processing with them. And files still play a really key role inside enterprises. So know now that you can integrate your file processing very seamlessly with all your other processing, whether it's web services, MQ, JMS, HTTP, or whatever. Moving on to chart number 22, I'd like to pull out here a couple of key capabilities that we have. Firstly, we have an email node now that allows to generate emails. And this is obviously sometimes very important when we actually want to generate operator alerts in certain kinds of connectivity processing. The second thing I'd like to draw out is new nodes allow us to integrate TCP/IP nodes. That's raw sockets applications with the broker. And obviously, we'd prefer folks to use proper messaging integration capabilities like MQ, because we believe that if you want to do enterprise-wide messaging, then having a proper messaging infrastructure to do that, as well as a message-oriented API, really makes that problem a lot simpler. However, lots of applications are sockets-based, and to be able to plug those into your ESB is a very, very powerful thought, and there are new nodes that have been developed in Message Broker that will allow you to do exactly that. And then the last node that I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about is the collector node. And what this allows you to do is some really advanced triggering inside the broker so that you can actually trigger off multiple disjoint sources. So, for example, you might have information coming from a queue and information in the file. And what the collector node allows you to do is to correlate that information and begin processing when you actually have a correlated input. So what it allows you to do is to really trigger inputs from multiple disparate sources and actually perform some intelligent processing when you know that you're ready to do that, rather than having to do some polling or something like that. Okay, moving on to the next chart, we really talk here about convergence between the message broker administration and the MQ administration. Many users will be using MQ version 6 now, and with that come the MQ Explorer, which is an administrative perspective that runs inside Eclipse. And the message broker now has the ability for operators of MQ and message broker to use the same tool to operate and manage their MQ and their message broker systems on ZOS. So we can see both ZOS and in fact, Z-Linux systems managed through the same Eclipse-based tooling as they are with MQ. We can see queue managers and brokers all on the same toolkit. We've also introduced in Message Broker the ability to look at performance data within this view from an operational perspective. So without any deployed assets being modified in any way, an operator can look at them, see how much CPU they're using, see how much I/O they're using. And really, it's a little bit like RMF capabilities, but customized for Message Broker, displayable within Eclipse. And it allows an operator, without actually having to refer back to the development team, to understand how flows are performing. It can be turned on dynamically, and it's a very powerful capability. Moving on to chart number 24. I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the advanced security features that the broker has on both Z-Linux and ZOS. The broker really is now a very strong product in terms of having a full runtime security model, and it actually provides what's called a policy enforcement point for security. For any transport request that arrives at the broker, whether it's on the MQ, HTTP, JMS, or web services transports and protocols, the broker can extract an identity, it can authenticate that identity, and it can also authorize that identity to the flow that it's running. Now, the broker doesn't actually do that itself. What it does is it calls out to a policy decision point, a PDP technology, such as LDAP or TFIM. And what that allows you to do is to have an enterprise-wide security model whilst having capabilities to do identity management, identity mapping, authentication and authorization. And this is very simple to configure. On any one of the transport input nodes, the user can declare that they either want to use the default identity, and that will be taken from a standard location. So, for example, if you're using MQ, that will come out of the MQMD user identifier. If you're using web services, it will come out of the WS security headers. Or you can take identity from within the message, and very often there might be a department or an organization ID buried within the message, and that's what you actually want to use as the entity for security checking. We can then pass that information out to LDAP or TFIM to actually do some authentication of that and authorization against the message flow that's running it. Now, this configuration to an external policy decision point is not something that the designer needs to worry about. It's actually configured by the administrator. And essentially what it allows the administrator to do is to really configure security at an operational level. So this is actually quite powerful. We now have the ability within the broker to run as a policy enforcement point for all the major transports and protocols to extract an identity in a very simple way from either a default or custom specified location, and to use policy decision point technology such as LDAP or TFIM to enforce an enterprise-wide authorization and authentication model. In the case of TFIM, that's Tivoli Federated Identity Manager, we can also do something called identity mapping. And this is particularly powerful if users are talking between maybe a portal application to their back-end CICS system, where the user identifiers in the front-end domain may be very different to the user identifiers in the CICS domain. And what identity mapping allows you to do is to change the identity as it passes through the broker to make sure that the identity is mapped from a front-end domain to a back-end domain to make sure that resource access is correctly observed from a security perspective. Moving on to chart number 25. I'd just like to spend a few moments talking about performance. There's been, again, significant performance improvements on Message Broker version 6.1. Significant performance improvements on all platforms, both Z-Linux and ZOS, and they really are based on real customer-verified scenarios. And you will get significant performance improvements just by upgrading to version 6.1. However, there are significant performance improvements and sparklers in the area of XML processing. If you're processing XML documents that are slightly more complex than just straightforward, simple XML documents, you will see up to 150% throughput performance improvements. And if you're doing XML validation, then you will see up to 3 times performance improvements. And the message broker is no slouch in terms of performance at the moment, but really in terms of XML processing, it's made another leap forward. It's always important that we focus on storage reduction, and again, broker version 6.1 has made some significant improvements in terms of reducing the amount of virtual storage required by any of one of its execution group address spaces. So that's really the summary on chart number 26. WebSphere Message Broker version 6.1 is a really strong release, and it builds on version 6. And it really does give industry-leading performance on a broad range of scenarios, all about that heterogeneous experience. An unparalleled range of integration opportunities. We've introduced new support for file, new support for web services, new support for systems like SAP. And we do have these 5 key themes around ease of use, enhanced SOA support, admin assistance management, extended connectivity, and platform support and performance that we've played to. So we really feel that version 6.1 is another great step for Message Broker on our roadmap, and I'd encourage users to think about moving to it as quickly as their business needs them to. So I'm now going to hand over to my colleague, Rob Tippin, who's going to talk about WebSphere ESB. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm going to take us through an update on WebSphere ESB 6.1. I'll start off with some basics in terms of platform support and then go through additional capabilities for connectivity, additional mediation function that we've added, and some capabilities really provided at installation and administration time for making it easier to deploy the product. As I go through, I'll be talking about the tooling updates that have been placed into the WebSphere Integration Developer product to make that easier. Before we get to the update, though, I'll do a couple of charts just to give us an orientation on WebSphere ESB itself. So moving on to chart 29, WebSphere ESB is actually part of a product stack. It sits immediately on top of the WebSphere Application Server Network Deployment Edition, which gives it a nice range of quality of service, including clustering. The Web3 ESB product adds the mediation layer, the layer that's there to help you build intermediary function. And then the next larger product is the WebSphere process server, which additionally provides service choreography and a solution viewpoint. Moving on to chart 30, just a very quick tour of WebSphere ESB as it is prior to the 6.1 release. We have a range of connectivity options in terms of adapters. So there are adapters are provided with the tooling for WebSphere ESB, and there's a full license to run them in production with WebSphere ESB for flat file, email, and JDBC. And in fact, the entire family of WebSphere adapters is supported by WebSphere ESB. In terms of standard support, we've got web services, HTTP, UDDI, and so on, and messaging. The other integration that's been done is with the WebSphere service registry and repository, which, as Anthony has said, for the message broker, we're using for dynamic routing. Inside the ESB itself, we concentrate on the provision of the mediation function and the connectivity options in terms of protocols. Moving on to chart 32 on the basics. In terms of ZEOS support, announced on the 9th of October 2007 and planned for availability on February the 1st, so coming very soon, we're planning support for ZEOS version 1.7 or later. So going on to the core of the ESB functionality, the basic connectivity options that WebSphere ESB provides. On chart 34, we have the HTTP export and import. This is new ability for WebSphere ESB to communicate directly using HTTP, and that's support for version 1.0 and 1.1 with support for SSL. And that supports request response invocation and the setting of headers in the HTTP request and response dynamically and statically. A collection of payloads are supported for the HTTP transport, binary, XML, and SOAP. And of course, we already support the full web services interaction using SOAP over HTTP. This is, in effect, providing lower-level access for those who need to access the HTTP transport-level information itself. On the next chart, we've added support for a wide range of additional JMS providers, specifically those that support the JMS 1.1 ASF specification. That's an optional part of the JMS 1.1 specification, and pretty much all of the major suppliers of JMS support that standard, and they're listed on the chart. It avoids requiring very much in the way of deployment descriptor editing. It gets the resources set up for you. Also in the admin console, it's possible to modify the binding properties, which enables you to modify a variety of properties on the binding. In addition, along with the existing JMS bindings, it's possible to do dynamic updates to JMS headers via the service message object that's used within the mediation programming model. So for format support on chart 36, we've got new integration with the WebSphere transformation extender via a collection of data bindings. So we've integrated with the WebSphere transformation extender. This effectively enables, really for the first time, the ability for WebSphere ESB to produce format handling using the tooling provided with WebSphere transformation extender. Process server and ESB already support a range of formats such as XML, SOAP, and so on. Transformation extender supports a very much wider range of formats. The WTX data bindings are actually supported across all of the transport protocol bindings, transport imports and exports. And those bindings can really be used for any data on any format. So on chart 37, just looking across the data bindings, we've got one for JMS, for HTTP, for MQ, and for the EIS import that works with the adapters. And there are a couple of things that are provided out of the box to make using WebSphere Transformation Extender message format handling easy to use. The first is you can select a transformation map based on a header within the message that's being dealt with, or via some value contained within the message itself. And that delegates to a map that can be defined using the Transformation Extender tooling. Looking now to the mediation updates themselves, these are the additional function that enables you to construct intermediary function. On chart 39, we've got a new business object map primitive. Customers who've been using WebSphere Process Server for a period of time will have been using business object maps for some time. This is the way in which Process Server has always allowed customers to restructure their messages. This capability is new in the WebSphere ESB product, and it's particularly useful for people who wish to use the maps with WebSphere ESB that they've perhaps previously been using with WebSphere Process Server. One particular thing that's supported by the Business Object Map primitive is the ability to do relationship-based mapping. Relationships are an administered capability for specifying value-to-value mappings in a tabular form, and that can actually be modified at runtime. On chart 48, we've got the new type refinement primitive. It's frequently the case that, for example, dealing with standards or dealing with industry standards, a message structure will be only partially fully defined. So, for example, you might contain a part that's specially designed for customization. In XML schema, structures like that that are designed to be overridden are typically modeled using what they call weak types, such as any type, any simple type, or any. The set message type mediation primitive is explicitly there to allow a dynamic cast of the message during its processing, so that that more detailed structure that's being used can be used within the mediation flow. Once that's been done, that more detailed structure can be used for mapping, routing, or any other purpose. On chart 41, we've got a new service invocation mediation primitive. It's always been the case in ESB mediation flows that you can do service invocations, but previously that's only been explicitly possible at the end of a flow. We've now added the capability for doing a service invocation at any time during a flow, and that does not mean that you transition to the response flow. That means, for example, that you could do more than one service invocation during a flow. An enhancement that's been made both to the service invocation primitive and the existing callout primitive is the ability to do automatic retries. And you can specify when a retry happens. For example, you can specify that it happens on any fault or any fault that's been modeled on a service interface or any unknown fault. There's a retry count, the number of times that you're prepared to try before carrying on, and a retry delay, and a variety of further options for specifying precisely how you want that retry to happen. One other point about the service invocation is that it can be fully asynchronous, which means that the flow doesn't need to hang around holding on to threads whilst waiting for an asynchronous response. A pair of new mediation primitives on chart 42, the fanout and fanin mediation primitives. Those are really there for splitting and aggregating messages that are typically messages with multiple elements of a similar type. as we're showing on the chart 42, during a fan-out, it's possible to do a variety of operations, notably, for example, invoking a service partner. Having done that, the results from multiple service invocations can be aggregated together. On chart 43, I'm showing a couple of details there. We've got the one example of the fanout primitive being used based on a repeating element. Basically, the message can be split up into elements based on the repeating element, and the flow effectively branches into as many branches as there are repeating elements. And that means that you can do that many service invocations or other operations on the message and then gather the values back together. The second example is an explicit and graphically obvious branching of paths that are later joined by a fanin. That allows a composite message to be split up for individual processing and then reassembled. Finally, on the primitive enhancements, we have the custom mediation primitive. We've always had the custom mediation primitive. This is the place where customers can write their own custom Java code. But in the previous releases, it was quite restricted in its capability. It was only allowed to have a single input terminal and a single output terminal. In the 6.1 release, that's been totally relaxed. It can have as many input terminals as you like and as many output terminals as you like. And that means that quite complex processing can be encapsulated in a custom mediation primitive. It's also possible to reuse these primitives by cut and paste. Moving now on to some enhancements to the administration and setup of Web3 ESB. On chart 46, and really encapsulating quite a large additional piece of ease of use when setting things up, there's some template-driven network deployment topology setup. Anyone who's done a complicated network deployment setup will know that it's not a straightforward activity at all. And WebSphere ESB and WebSphere Process Server both make full exploitation of the capabilities of WebSphere ND. So it's very useful to get that just right. So quite a lot of analysis has gone into choosing three recommended topologies. And the selection of those topologies is actually now driven by a relatively simple wizard. And those topologies really are all about the different roles that the nodes in the network deployment topology can play. And there are basically three of them. One role is as the place to hold the applications. That's essentially the WebSphere ESB mediations. Another role is to hold support applications, such as the CEI infrastructure. And the last and certainly not least is the set of nodes required to run the messaging underlying the WebSphere ESB. And the three topologies that are easily constructed out of the box are one in which all nodes perform all roles. The next is where nodes can just hold the applications and support applications with the messaging separated into a separate cluster. And then finally, and probably the most flexible, the configuration in which all three are separated into their own clusters. The nice thing about that is that it certainly reduces the amount of effort required to set that up. Moving on to chart 48, this has been a short summary of the WebSphere ESB 6.1 updates. A lot of work has been spent on consumability, both in the administration and development interfaces. There's also been quite a lot of additional work on function, additional connectivity in terms of JMS, and in terms of HTTP, and the additional format support provided by the integration with Transformation Extender, and additional mediation function. Certainly a lot of work to continue the maturity and evolution of the product. I'll now hand back to Anthony for the WebSphere Data Power XI50.
Cheers, Rob. Thank you. Okay, so I'm on chart number 49. So I'm now going to spend a little bit of time speaking about WebSphere Data Power XI50, which is the third offering inside the ESB portfolio. Moving on to chart number 50, the WebSphere Data Power integration appliance, the XI50, is a purpose-built piece of hardware for simplified ESB deployment and hardened security. And whilst performing all the ESB functions that WebSphere ESB and WebSphere Message Broker do in terms of those generic capabilities, its specialization here is that it is a hardware device. Okay? So really a piece of strong innovation in terms of redefining the boundary between hardware and software in terms of a piece of specialized middleware that actually runs on hardware. It's got many of the ESB functions. They are integrated onto a single device. And that does actually help in terms of a simplified deployment model and ongoing management. And, of course, on ZOS and Zlinux, we like to run software that runs on the platform. But often folks are very comfortable with the idea of network devices that run in close proximity as an adjunct to the systemz platform. This is a reasonable way to view the Data Power appliance, but that is as an ESB in its own right as well. If we look at the four capabilities of an ESB as they relate to WebSphere Data Power XI50, in terms of our routing and matching capability, it's all about securing services on the network, having a web services access control to actually administer the device, and applying policy enforcement, which again is a very natural thought if we think about this appliance sat as a close adjunct in proximity to our systemz box. It can also perform things like message filtering and message field encryption. In fact, in an earlier scenario, we saw how the XI50 can actually be used with WebSphere Message Broker to do exactly that kind of gateway function in terms of field-level encryption. In terms of transport protocol support, there is strong transport support inside the XI50, and we'll speak a little bit about that in a short while. In terms of transformation capabilities, it does provide a wide range of transformation for data formats, including XML, legacy, and industry formats. And it also allows you to do business event processing in terms of handling business events as they're distributed across the ESB and integrates well with business activity monitoring solutions. Moving on to chart number 51, I'm just putting together here a simple scenario for using a Data Power device with a client that's trying to interact maybe using SOAP HTTP with a systemz box. So on the left-hand side, we can see a client. They're consuming using the SOAP over HTTP protocol. We can see on the right-hand side the systemz box, and we can see IMS and CICS applications enabled using MQ series. So in this case, we might have an IMS transaction that's running inside an IMS region, and it may be programmed to MQ API, or it might be using the OTMA bridge out of the MQ series queue manager to talk into IMS. And similarly for CICS, we could have maybe an MQ-enabled CICS application, transaction program, or actually could be using one of the Kix bridge technologies. The net, though, is that those applications are actually MQ-enabled. And what we can use with Data Power is actually some of its transport support, and because there is actually an MQ client inside the WebSphere Data Power box, and we can actually take in the SOAP HTTP request and transform it into a COBOL copybook or binary type format using the MQ client support inside the Data Power box, and use a client connection from the Data Power box into MQ and drive that systemz transaction that's in this case running MQ enabled under IMS or CICS. And that shows you a typical scenario that you can use here with systemz. It's running as a close adjunct. If we move on to chart number 52, we can actually see a bit more of a specialization here where we actually have applications that are running inside IMS, inside CICS, but actually running as web services inside those capabilities. Many users of systemz will know that CICS has brought out from its 2.3, following through with its 3.1 and 3.2 release, native support for web services inside CICS. And in this kind of scenario, in a similar way to IMS web services support, the Data Power device actually provides some other capabilities, not just around matching protocols. It provides the ability to provide an XML SOAP firewall, for example, where it can filter on content. It provides the ability to validate approving incoming and outgoing XML and SOAP requests. It can provide field-level security especially in WS security scenarios. And the real benefit here is that sometimes when you're actually doing some web services processing on System Z, it can use quite a lot of very expensive MIPS. And what you have when you use Web Service Data Power as an ESP is the ability to not use some of the really expensive MIPS on System Z when you're interacting and yet still expose things as a web service asset. If we look at chart number 53, we can look at some of the enhancements that we've got to Web Service Data Power XI50 in the version 3.6.1 release. We can see this expanded integration and connectivity as a key theme, where we've enhanced DMQ support, and we also support the WSRX standard for reliable messaging. There's additional support for VLAN and NFS version 4, and also we can see, as we can with WebSphere Message Broker and WebSphere ESP, that support for WSRR and registries is actually a key part of being able to allow our ESP technology to be driven in a federated way by a single registry. There's support for SOAP 1.1 and WS security updates, and as you can see, WS security plays a key theme across our ESP technologies. There is also integration with DB2 version 9 pure XML. In terms of enhanced governance capabilities, there is support for WS policy framework and also WS security policy. You can see in version 3.6.1 there have been some good updates to version 1.1 of WS security, and WS security policy enhancements are also key here. There's basic profile support and also basic security profile support. And then in terms of the ease of use, again, the tooling that is, web service-based tooling and browser-based tooling that we've got, that we've shown a little screen snapshot there on the right-hand side, there's been some real enhancements there so that we actually have a natural way of defining how the integration happens between the client as it flows through Data Power acting as an ESB and is consumed on System Z as a service. So those charts through to chart number 53 really talk about how the XI50 can be used as a very, very powerful ESB technology in conjunction with System Z. Okay, so that's the last thing I really want to talk about in terms of ESB technology. Just as a reminder, it's worth letting people know that there is actually an Impact conference coming in Vegas where you can learn about all of IBM's ESB technologies, WebSphere Message Broker, WebSphere ESB, and WebSphere Data Power. It's being held in Las Vegas. It's between April the 6th and April the 11th this year. And you'll have the opportunity to talk to practitioners and experts from the development organizations on all of IBM's ESB technologies. And if you do get the opportunity, look that up on the web. And please feel free to contact your IBM rep and try and get some tickets and come along and meet us there and really learn about our ESB technologies in real depth from the people who built them in our development labs.
Thank you, Anthony and Rob. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenters. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time that you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. And our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to signal. Question, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, we'll please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 3. If you're currently considering or using an ESB, which one is it? If it is IBM WebSphere Message Broker, press star 1. If it is IBM WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, press star 2. If it is IBM DataPower XI50, press star 3. Or if it is an ESB from a different vendor, press star 4. We'll pause for just a moment. Question 4. If you are currently looking to start using WebSphere Message Broker or running it already, what platform are you considering or running it on? If it is ZOS, press star 1. If it is Linux for System Z, press star 2. If it is a distributed platform, press star 3. Or if it is System Z and distributed, press star 4. Again, we'll pause for just a moment. And our final question. We hope that you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. That concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch tone telephone. At this time, I'll turn the conference back over to our speakers while we wait for questions. Once again, that is star 1 for questions. And gentlemen, it appears there are no questions at this time. Anthony, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
Thanks, Jennifer. The only thing I'd like to say is that we really would like to invite everybody to Impact between April the 6th and April the 11th to get some hands-on experience with all of our ESBs. There'll be some labs in Vegas. And also to speak to lots of our development experts from the Hursley Laboratory and also from Cambridge as well. So that's my closing invite there for folks. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'd simply echo that. We'll be there.
And that does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.